Hey, you're tuned in to the Verve Podcast live from the heart of Las Vegas, Nevada. Thanks for listening, and viva la Verve!
Do you guys remember class elections back in high school? Like when people would run for like secretary and treasurer, stuff like that? Well, let me tell you about my greatest political achievement. It was our junior year, and we were running for class president for our senior year. Now, I had already been class president our freshman year, sophomore year, and junior year. And each of those years, I had actually run unopposed because, I mean, come on. So it came time to turn in our applications in our junior year for our senior year's offices, and I turned in my application. I asked the support staff there, I said, hey, did anybody else turn in an application to run for president? And they said, no. And so I kind of felt a little gypped. I thought like, oh man, I never know what it was like to like put a campaign together and give a speech and all that. And so I was in my next period class, chemistry, and I was sitting next to my friend Matt. And I came up with a plan. And I convinced Matt to run against me entirely on the platform that he was ill-fit to lead and everyone should vote for me. And he agreed to do it. So he turned in his application, which means that we got to give speeches and like have this little debate thing. And so I get up in front of our class and I give this rousing and moving, you know, tear-jerking speech about why I would be the best senior class president ever. You know, I promised things like open lunches and free AOL accounts for all students, hotter student teachers. You know, I was going to give them the world. And Matt gets up and he says, hey, all that stuff Jake said sounds pretty good. Let's all vote for him. That was literally a speech. Everything was going perfectly until we counted the votes. Matt won in a landslide. Wasn't even close. Yeah. So I tried to convince myself it was just a joke that kind of got out of hand, but apparently our class was prime for a revolution. So the bourgeoisie was out and Matt was in. Now, looking back on it, once my ego recovered, I actually realized it was probably the greatest thing to happen to me that year. You know all those class reunions that you get bothered about again and again and again? The ones that are always asking for money and trying to travel at odd times? You know who has to organize those for the rest of their lives? Yeah, my greatest political achievement was that I lost. Well, this past Tuesday, we elected the 45th president of the United States, and if statistics tell us anything, about 25% of you are happy, 25% of you are upset, 25% of you don't care, and 25% of you are moving to Canada. Now, so this election season, it's been a rough one. There's been a lot of kind of nasty moments, and there's a lot of stuff that we probably wish that we could forget about it, but honestly, it's probably an election that's going to stick with us for some time. So today we're going to talk about politics, but before I get into it, I want to be absolutely 100% clear. I don't care which way you lean. I don't care if you're far right or far left or somewhere in the middle. I don't care if you're Republican, Libertarian, Democrat, Independent. You can have any of those positions, and you are very welcome here. All of those are welcome here. I do not think it is the church's job to try to have any kind of influence on which way you vote. I've heard of churches putting out like voter guides, and personally, this is me talking, like I would be very wary of any church that seemed to have any kind of political agenda. That's me. But politics are a funny thing, though, and we are going to talk about it today. There are probably fewer topics that you can bring to a dinner table that might incite fireworks as much as a discussion on politics. But what do we mean when we say politics? What are we talking about? Well, so we're in this series, and we're Grace is Greater Than. And when I saw that I had the opportunity to speak today, the week after the election, I asked Vince if I could talk about politics, because being Facebook friends with many of you, I know how passionately some of you carry the torch for your various political affinities. And some of you, just when Jacob was up here earlier and said we're going to talk about politics, some of you probably like threw up a little bit in your mouth, right? Like, you're happy just because it's over. No more ads, no know where flyers gunking up your front door, right? I am friends with people on both sides of the kind of political spectrum. And I've had people, and I've seen people post on Facebook that, like, you can't be a Christian if you vote this way or that way. And even, you can't be my friend. You can't be my friend if you don't vote this way. This word politics, it's kind of become a bad word. When we just begin discussing politics, it often leads to a fight, or we associate it with money or corruption or scandal or oppression. And I think when most of us think about politics, we probably think about the presidency, we think about Congress, we think about elections. It's often the most controversial or positions or processes which kind of rub us the wrong way and tend to stay in our minds. But the truth is, politics is so much bigger than that. And so one of the first things I want to do today is I want to talk about how politics is a good word. Politics is a good word. The word politics, it has its roots in Latin, in Greek. The word polis, like at the end of Minneapolis or Indianapolis, it simply means city. And so the polites were the citizens of that city. The French, they call it politique with a Q because they're French. But it means of or relating to the city. Interestingly, the word polite simply refers to the way we as citizens relate to one another, politely. And so when we talk about politics, what we're talking about is how we as citizens organize our shared life together. Because, hey, we're all in this together. Right? Like everyone in your apartment building, everyone in your gated neighborhood, everyone in your school district, everyone in your city, in your county, in your state, in this country, we're all in this together. And politics is how we as citizens go about organizing that shared life together so that it flourishes. But politics are a necessary and a vital part to our life. And the better we are at politics, the better we will be at having a thriving shared life together. This, it's actually what our forefathers were talking about when they began the Constitution. We, the people of the United States of America, in order to form a more perfect union, we're going to do it better. We're going to establish justice. It's going to be fair, ensure domestic tranquility. We're going to have peace, provide for the common defense. We're going to be safe, promote general welfare. We want everyone to be happy. We want everything to be good and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness. Do hereby ordain and establish the Constitution of the United States of America. Now, that idea, the ideas they had in their head at the time, those have changed over the years precisely because they gave it room to change. And we've done a better and better job over the years establishing that, making it better for everyone. And so over the last 200 years, that's what we've done. We've done politics with varying degrees of success. And we are surrounded every day with the results and the effects of those politics at a national level, but also at a state, at a county, at a local, and even at an individual level. Here's what I mean. If you go out the warehouse here and you go into the bathroom here at Verve and you turn the faucet, water comes out. Clean, safe water. And this is an effect of politics. Unless you live in Flint, Michigan, then it's an effect of lead poisoning. But here, someone somewhere decided that the best course of action for the citizens in this water district would be that when we turn on a faucet, safe and clean water comes out at a moment's notice. And so pipes were put in, treatment facilities, pumping stations, and a massive dam was built so that when you and I turn the faucet, water comes out. But who? Who decided that? Who decided what would come out of the faucet? Who decides how much? Who decides the standards that water must meet? Who decides what will happen if there's no more water, if there's a drought? I spent the last 2 days in Modesto, California, which smells like an armpit. Oh my gosh. Is anybody from there? I know why you moved if you're from there. Anyway, but driving up and down from Modesto to here, there were signs all over the place, political signs dealing with this idea of water. So what happens if there's a drought? Who decides who gets how much water? How much go to people? How much go to crops? How much go to livestock? And what happens if you go over? I read an article this past week talked about how two cities in Southern California, right next to each other, one city said, hey, it's okay to water your lawn. You can water your lawn. The other city says there's a massive fine if you water your lawn. Well, who decides? Who gets to pick? Who says when it's okay to water and who is going to get fined if they water? And who picks how much that fine will be? Now, these are all results of the political process. What about the food you eat when you go to the grocery store? You have a box, you look at it, and there's ingredients on the box of what's inside of that. Well, who decided? Who said that that would be good for us, that would be a necessary addition to the food manufacturing process? Politics. Politics decided. And now politics can be confusing. I have a good friend I was talking to at a party last week. He is the director for the Office of Cultural Affairs here in Las Vegas. And he was telling me how his eyes were opened to the complexity that politics can often have to it. He was talking about how his office wanted to put in a statue at a park. And so he went to the city manager and said, hey, we want to put in this statue. And the city manager said, okay, well, the first thing you need to do, the very first thing you need to do is go talk to financing. But before you talk to financing, make sure you talk to urban development. And before you talk to urban development, it might be a good idea to run it by Parks and Rec. And before you do that, you probably should go to engineering. And so my friend said, okay, so I'll go to engineering, then Parks and Rec, then development, and then I'll talk to who? And he said, no, you got to talk to finance first. Talk to finance first. Before you do that, talk to urban development. And he said it just got complicated, you know, because politics can be a little bit like that. You know, food, water, parking, land development, roads, sewers, airspace, traffic signals, businesses, agriculture, teachers, policemen, parks. Who figured all of that out? Who set all that up? Well, we did. Politics did. It's our shared life together. Politics, it's a good word. Politics is a good word. It has played a massive role in your life. And it is vital to creating a shared, a thriving shared life together here on this planet. Politics is a good word. And politics is nothing new. Jesus dealt with politics. Jesus lived in a time when the Romans ruled the civilized world. And Jesus was neither Roman, and the Romans were rarely civilized. And often if you disagreed with the Romans' politics, you could find yourself on the wrong end of a beating or a flogging or even a crucifixion. Not only were the Romans physically oppressive, they were psychologically oppressive as well. When they would go in and occupy a territory, they would force the occupants of that occupied territory to pay for the occupancy. So not only would they beat you and make your life, you know, a living hell, that you had to pay for it too. You had to pay for that privilege. And so what they would do then, they would get some of the locals to serve as liaisons, to go around collecting that tax that paid for the occupation. So these were your neighbors. This was your dad, your brother, your best friend. All of a sudden, they were on the other side. They were on the enemy's side. And the Romans would say, hey, tax collector, if you want, we only need 8. So if you want to go around and collect 10, that's 2 for you. And so you can see how quickly these tax collectors kind of became not terribly popular, quite hated as a matter of fact. And this system was designed, these taxes were designed to make it as such so that eventually the Romans owned your land. And any work that you could actually produce on the land only went to supporting the Romans. And so this is this traditional family land you used to own that now, because of taxes, you don't own anymore, and the work you can make on your old land was barely enough to survive. It was very oppressive, both physically and psychologically. And anytime there's oppression, there's always going to be opposition to that oppression. In Jesus' day, these were the zealots. The zealots hated Rome. They hated anything that had to do with Rome. In fact, somewhere around the time that Jesus was born, there was a famous zealot named Judas that tried to lead a revolution. People called him the Messiah. He tried to overthrow Rome, but he failed and he was killed. The funny thing is, among those that followed Jesus were tax collectors and zealots. In fact, we know that two of Jesus' closest friends, one was a tax collector and one was a zealot. Jesus lived in a time of great political animosity when people expected the Messiah to raise up a political revolution, raise up an army, overthrow Rome, set up a theocratic kingdom. But instead, we see Jesus come along and he makes friends with both sides of the political spectrum. And he says nothing of the sort. In fact, the only thing Jesus ever said that was kind of even remotely political was terribly nonchalant, if anything. You see, the powers that be, they wanted to trap him. They didn't like the things that Jesus was saying. He was going around talking about a kingdom where everyone was equal, from the greatest to the least. And in fact, the least were probably even the most important. He talked about a kingdom ruled by a king who loved everyone as his child. He talked about a time that would come when the king was going to rule all with love and compassion. Well, the political leaders, the religious leaders of that day, they weren't okay with this. And so they tried to trap him. They tried to show that Jesus was against Rome. And so we have in the book of Luke, we have a passage I want to read for you. If you have a Bible, you can turn to the book of Luke. We'll start with chapter 20. If you don't, if you didn't bring a Bible with you, that's fine. We'll put the what everything I'm going to say out of the Bible up here on the screen behind me so you can follow along, see what I'm talking about. If you don't own an easy-to-read translation of the Bible, you can grab one back at the Velcro bar back there. We give them out for free. We want everyone to have one, so you can go out and grab one. I've met a lady between services coming back. We have English and Spanish, and she grabbed the Spanish. She didn't realize, so make sure you grab the one you want there. All right, so Luke chapter 20. Here's what this says. It says, keeping a close watch on him, which is, they're talking about Jesus, they, the religious and political leaders, sent spies who pretended to be sincere. They hoped to catch Jesus in something he said so they can hand him over to the power and authority of the governor. So the spies questioned him. Teacher, we know you speak and teach what is right and that you do not show partiality, but teach the way of God in accordance with the truth. They're buttering him up. So is it right for us to pay taxes to Caesar or not? They're saying, do you support Caesar or not? Are you in league with this or not? Well, he, being Jesus, saw through their duplicity. And he said to them, show me a denarius, which is a coin. It says, whose image and inscription are on it? Caesar's, they replied. He said to them, then give back to Caesar what is Caesar's, and to God what is God's. And they were unable to trap him in what he had said there in public. And astonished by their answer, they became silent. This is a denarius. This is the coin Jesus is referring to. As you can see, it resembles, you know, kind of modern coinage a little bit. There's a bust of a leader on the front. This is maybe the one, an image of the one that was around in Jesus' time. That Caesar right there is Tiberius. It's a picture of his mom on the back. And so Jesus holds this and he says, hey, give to Caesar what belongs to Caesar. This looks like Caesar. It must be his. But give to God what is God's, which is all of us, because we have his image on us. See, knowing that a denial of paying taxes would have been enough to bring charges of insurrection, but admission of submission would weaken Jesus' position with the people, the spies waited to see which way Jesus would go. And Jesus didn't do either. He didn't pledge allegiance to Caesar, and he didn't advocate anarchy. He simply hinted at a citizenship that was greater than the republic boundaries. He said, the stuff of earth belongs to the stuff of earth, but the stuff of heaven belongs to the stuff of heaven. You see, at Verve, it is our goal, it is our aim to love God, to love people, and to turn the world upside down with that love. We believe that's what Jesus came to do, to love God, love people, and turn the world upside down. And we believe by following the teachings of Jesus, we can do just that. In fact, we believe that by following Jesus, you're gonna start to change. You're going to develop certain habits and certain characteristics that will kind of define who you are, which totally makes sense, right? Like, if you talk to someone about their political leanings, it doesn't take a whole lot to figure out where they stand on that fence, right? Or you can just look at the signs in their yard. Or like when I worked at a computer store, all my jargon started to become very technical, right? It was like, you know, bytes and megabytes and hard drives and terabytes and memory and that. Or if you go to a doctor, she's going to use medical terms to describe things. Tibia, benign, cerebellum, diagnosis. Or like when I used to work in construction, we used to say things like, actually, I'm not going to tell you what we used to say. Probably would not be appropriate. But you get my point. And that's, as Christians, when we decide to follow Jesus, our behavior, our actions are going to begin to change, and they're going to develop some of these characteristics. There was an author in the Bible, his name is Paul, and he wrote about this in a book called Galatians. It was a letter to Galatia. And in it, he says, hey, if you want to be a citizen of earth, your life will probably kind of look something like this. But there's a better citizenship. And if you want to be a citizen of heaven, your life will begin to look like this. Here's what it says in Galatians chapter 5. It says, the acts of the flesh are obvious. So this is the citizenship of earth. Sexual immorality, impurity and debauchery, idolatry and witchcraft, hatred, discord, jealousy, fits of rage, selfish ambition, dissensions, factions and envy, drunkenness, orgies and the like. I warn you, as I did before, that those who live like this will not inherit the kingdom of God. But the fruit of the Spirit, the results of living in this kingdom, is love, joy, peace, forbearance, which is another word for patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Against such things there is no law. I love that last part. Against such things, there is no law. I don't think Paul meant, and I don't think the Bible means, that Christians can never be arrested. That's obviously not true, because Jesus was arrested and killed because of this message of love. His closest friends were all arrested, and all of them but one died because of preaching this message of love. But the writer of that very verse, eventually was arrested and killed for it. And even to this day, China, parts of Iraq, Saudi Arabia, you can be killed for preaching this message of love. But Paul isn't talking about politics here. That's not the kind of law he's mentioning. He's not talking about an earthly policy. He's talking about a citizenship in a different kind of kingdom. A kingdom where someone decided that everyone is equal. He's talking about a kingdom where someone decided that love was going to win. A kingdom where it doesn't matter if you're black or you're white or you're rich or you're poor or you're good looking or you're ridiculously good looking. It doesn't matter if you're single or you're married, orphan, widow, disabled, smart, or even if you're like me, you have an equal place at the table in this kingdom. And you can live forever with a good king where there'll be no more pain or suffering or hurting or loneliness or hypocrisy or racism or sexism or corruption. And thankfully, no more elections. Listen, I am not advocating for religious separatism, okay? Matter of fact, the same author of that last passage, he wrote about in the book of Romans how it is good to be a part. It is good to be a citizen. It is good to pay taxes. It is good to take part in politics. Romans 13, if you want to look it up. But what I am saying is, as Christians and as citizens of this kingdom, we should use that citizenship to augment our view of our citizenship here on earth. You know, here in America, we are very fortunate to be able to practice the religion of our choice, including non-religion. It is a wonderful freedom. But even if we did not have that freedom as Christians, we are expected to love each other. We are expected to serve each other. We are expected to practice self-control. We are expected to be joyful. The Bible doesn't say that we only do these things if there's a Republican in the White House. It doesn't say we only do these things if Democrats control Congress. It doesn't even say you can only do these things in a democracy. It simply says we love, that grace is greater than politics, and we love, period. We love with no exception. We love with no expectation. We love with no agenda. We love with no recognition. We simply choose to put the needs of other people above our own, and we love. And against that, there is no law. And we do this because we were loved first. I stated earlier that my greatest political victory came by way of defeat. Well, the greatest victory of all time came by way of defeat. Jesus was arrested and sent to the cross. Despite having no political agenda, no political aspirations, but he took upon himself the sins of the world. All those times when we were unloving, all those times when we were selfish and vain and jealous and angry and envious, and he died so that we could have life in his kingdom. He died for Jews, and he died for the Romans, and he died for Europeans, and he died for Americans, and he died for Mexicans, and he died for Syrians, and he died for Republicans and Libertarians and Democrats, and he even died for the French with their fancy Qs. So if this week has unsettled you at all due to the results of Tuesday night, by all means, work through the political process to see the change that you want to see in the world. Politics is a good thing, and it does a lot of good for a lot of people, but it can still be improved. But I want to tell you that there's an even greater thing. And the grace of God is so much greater than any political system. And if you have never experienced God's grace, that means politics is as good as it gets for you. I want something even greater for you. Every 4 years, we get to celebrate and exercise our freedom by participating or not participating in the election. But every week, we want to give you the opportunity to celebrate a different kind of freedom. We take communion. And communion is a piece of bread and a cup of juice which reminds us of the sacrifice that Jesus made for us so that we could have life in his kingdom. And so we want to make that available to you every week, especially today, on the candlelit tables around the room. You'll find that, including up here we have gluten-free option for the bread if you'd like. And so I'm going to pray, and the band's going to come up, and they're going to play one more song. And if you'd like to make communion a part of your worship celebration today, you can do so at that time. Let me pray. God, I am thankful. I'll speak for myself. I'm very thankful that I live in a land where I get to have a hand in the political system and the political climate that I find myself in. And God, this week is... I think has affected all of us in different ways. And so God, whichever way we find ourselves leaning and falling, God, I pray that we would find our footing on the truth that we are loved, that we have a place to belong, that we can be a part of your kingdom of love. And so God, today as we ponder these things, as we remember the sacrifice that your son made so that we could experience that love. May we experience something greater than any political system. May we experience your grace and the love that comes with it. So God, I pray all of this in the name of your son, Jesus. Amen.